Hi, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 19th of Av. And today I have something that I think is really special, and it made me realize that maybe by now I've been doing this for 6 weeks already or more, 8 weeks, and maybe those who are listening are those who are going to listen anyway, and those who aren't listening, I'm not going to get with this introduction, but perhaps I should have given this introduction a while back, and it's my bad, and I apologize, but if you hear it today and you find it useful and productive, you'll please let me know. My email is grothst@gmail.com. And I want to point out on the way to today, our tshuva, our responsive, is actually the introduction to a small sefer called Mishpat Kohen that was published, it's Rav Kook's sefer. It was written by Rav Kook, but it was published after his passing in 1937. It was published in 1937, which was after his passing. It's a sefer called Mishpat Kohen. And the introduction to Mishpat Kohen has several interesting things along the way, but as I'm realizing their introduction, and I'm doing it because it's dated, Mayor Berlin's introduction to Mishpat Kohen is dated the 19th of Av. So that's how it fits in. But let me just pause and note that part of why I think this is such a valuable project to me is a couple of things together. One is that I think it's, if we only have a half hour to learn Torah in a day, or if we're going to take a half hour to learn Torah in a day, I think it's nice. There's something more than serendipitous to me about learning Torah that was originally connected to that day. It connects us back to the Jewish calendar, which I think is an important thing for Jews to do, and it connects us to Torah that's Torah of that day. I also think that over the course of doing that day in, day out for a year, one gets a spread of an acquaintance with halacha that might not ordinarily happen in our usual Torah learning in the same way. So I think all that is valuable. I do think eventually you also get a sense of recurring patterns and themes within halacha, even though we're taking it from different people at different times in different contexts. I think that will happen, although that takes a while to show itself. That idea of an introduction and of thinking about what we're doing and why we're doing it is very much in the tshuva that we're going to, in the introduction that we're going to read today, and it gives us a whole new insight into Rav Kook and Rav Kook's life and who Rav Kook was and how Rav Kook saw himself as a Torah scholar, as a Torah figure. So I was very excited when I happened to stumble across this in the course of looking for something for the 19th of Av. So the 19th of Av, it's the man named Meir Berlin, who I think is Meir Bar Ilan, who was the youngest son of the Netziv. So this is Shut Mishpat Kohen. Shut Mishpat Kohen, our sponsor of Kook, has many responsa, and they were published after he passed away in volumes with different names to them. So while, let's say, Rav Yosef has two different kinds of responsa, he has Yabia Omer, which are his longer responsa, and then Yichaveda, which I think are based on radio answers that he gave, and then he published them as Yichaveda. Those are much shorter, but there's all Yichaveda or all Yabia Omer. And Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote Igrot Moshe. That's the volumes of response. Rav Kook, the people who published them, gave each of them different names. So I forget the other ones, but they're all connected to the word Kohen. So because Rav Kook was a Kohen, Mishpat Kohen is about matters having to do with Eretz Yisrael. It's 150 chapters on issues, lots of issues with Eretz Yisrael. Truma and Mas wrote agricultural issues. Orla, right, what you can do with fields that when you have new fruit trees that are just grown, about Sanhedrin and how you put together a Jewish court, about kings, about the Beit HaMikdash, about the temple, about sacrifices. A wide range of issues having to do with Eretz Yisrael in its fullest form. Introducing that book, and that introduction is dated the 19th of Av, Meir Berlin says this is the first of more than 30 books of Rav Kook, who had passed away by now, who was Zitzal already, who are going to be there. They had been set up a foundation, an aguda, to print, to publish his books after he passed away. So, A, it's important to note that for all that we today only know Rav Kook through his writings, and we know him, I think many of us know him through his thought, because that has become much more popular than his, much more popular and much more banded, discussed, much more quoted than maybe his halachic works. It's important to remember that Rav Kook's lifetime, he wrote voluminously, but he didn't publish that stuff. So the picture we have of Kook is very different from the picture of the life that he lived. Mary Berlin goes on to say that Mishpat Kohen is being published first, not coincidentally, it just doesn't happen that way, but because in that book, There's something particularly connected, he thinks, to Rav Kook's output. He says, in all of Rav Kook's writings, you find halacha, meaning you find Torah in its purest sense, but also ma'aseh, and the way to apply Torah to real life. You find thought and ideas, not just specific halachic facts. Yeah, you find his specialness that Rav Kook had. Meir Berlin is telling us that all the values of Judaism in all their depth and breadth were all part of Rav Kook's writings, Rav Kook's knowledge and understanding. But in particular, it's the laws of Eretz Yisrael. Why in particular the laws of Eretz Yisrael? Because from the time that he was a Rav in Yafo and its surrounding settlements, and then he moved on to be the chief rabbi, and Rav Kook made Aliyah, I believe, in 1904 when he was a man of 44 and lived the rest of his life in Eretz Yisrael. So in all that time that he was in Eretz Yisrael, Meir Berlin says, he was teaching and learning the laws Tliyot Ba'aretz, the laws connected to living in Eretz Yisrael and working the land and being part of Eretz Yisrael, which in the exile had never been as practical. They weren't as practical because not enough people were living in Eretz Yisrael for there to be sort of a critical mass of people. But as the early 1900s, people were coming back and there were questions being raised by those of the people coming back who were observant or those who weren't observant but needed to serve the observant. So Rav Kook is dealing with many halachic questions in practical terms that hadn't been dealt with in a long time. So therefore, Meir Berlin is telling us they thought that all of those halachot that he spent so much of his time on it, which in most traditional Batei Midrash houses of study were thought of as Hilchot al Mishicha, is a very nice it's sort of a nice play there. He's writing this in 1937 already, which is much beyond, which is, you know, the settlement of Eretz Yisrael is growing rapidly by this point. And his point is that people in exile, in Galut, always thought of as Hilchot Mashiach, meaning in some far off time when Mashiach comes. So when Mashiach comes can be for many people something that you can't even begin to imagine. But here, these halachot, at the very least, are now alive. And that was a very big contribution, he's saying, of Rav Kook's. They came to life in Rav Kook's hands and others' hands, but Rav Kook's hands as well, and they're part of the, what he says is, ha-chayim ha-mit-havim be-eretz kodshenu, that are developing in our land. So this is 1937, and today we are much beyond that. I'm recording this in the English year 2016, 5776 on the Jewish calendar. It's not quite 100 years, it's 80 years later, and the still developing life in Eretz Yisrael is leaps and bounds beyond what it was then, and yet Meir Berlin is looking at it, and from the perspective of seeing it 30 years after Rav Kook arrived, and it's developing, and Rav Kook, he's saying, was one of the first who said that if you're going to build Eretz Yisrael, who helped out with the building of Eretz Yisrael, he was HaKohen HaGadol Asher Horach Asur V'Ata Mutar. The great Kohen Gadol, meaning the high priest, but he wasn't actually Kohen Gadol because it wasn't actually Beit HaMikdash, who taught everybody what was prohibited and what was allowed, not just B'dievet, but how to do it in a way that would be according to the Torah and the Chachila, and he did it in a very practical way, and that's why Meir Berlin thinks that it's important that this is valuable, that this is coming out first. So it's first, he says, in that it's coming out first, meaning there aren't a lot of sfarim like this, and it's also rishon b'ma'aleh. It also thinks the quality is great because when people give halacha in Eretz Yisrael today, they all know that Rav Kook was the giant of being the Mori Hara of his time, and now he wants to thank, uses a Talmudic phrase, tivuta l'shakya, which means. So the phrase in the Gemara in Bava Kama, I had to look it up. In Bava Kama, it said, the phrase in the Gemara is "Abitui chamre lemare v'tivuta l'shakye," which means the wine belongs to the king, and the mashke, the person who gives out the wine, is a tov ayin, helping people have the wine. So he's trying to thank Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, who is the one who took care of publishing Mishpat Haaretz, meaning who went through it and he edited it and he annotated it when Rav Kook didn't write the Maariv Makom, because Rav Kook knows all this in his head, it's just flowing from him. So Rav Tzvi Yehuda makes sure to tell us where we can find it if we want to look it up. So that's the Tivuta L'Shakya, that's the butler who's giving out the king's wine. The king has wine, he's happy to have everybody have it, but the butler is the one who actually gives it out. And so he closes his introduction by thanking Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook for being willing to do that. That's the 19th of Av of Tufresh Tzadi Zayin of 1937. That in of itself, I have to say, wouldn't have been necessarily enough for me to think this would be worth our while. It's a nice introduction, but it's an introduction, it's what it is. But then, Tzvi Yehuda has something, and then I've got a surprise coming after that. Although if you know the book Mishpat Haaretz, the Shut Mishpat Haaretz, you'll know it already. But so now there's Tzvi Yehuda the day before this, on Yud Chet Av, had written a small introduction as well. And so he starts it off with a quote from a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says, V'zed divar ha-mishpat, bizman she'yesh kohen, yesh mishpat. This is the matter of the law, is what the pasuk says. And the Gemara says, because it's connected to a kohen in the pasuk, where it says, if you have a kohen around, then you have real mishpat. Then it quotes Yerushalmi in Kiddushin that says, Gidul omer, kol omer, shmua mishem omra. If you quote somebody, so we all know the mission in Avot that says, Yomer devar mishem omro, mevigo la la olam. You bring redemption to the world. There's another Gemara that says, and when we quote Tzadikim, it's from Dovev Siftei Shanim, that their lips move in their graves. But the Yerushalmi that Rav Tzvi Yehuda quoted was, Kol ha'omer shmua b'shem omra yehei ro'ek ki'ilu ba'al ha'shmua omed lefanav. It's like the person who said it is standing before you. So he says he's thinking that now because this is, in publishing this book, it's the first fulfillment of Tzava'at HaKodesh Mitzorech HaDorot, of the command of sanctity and the need of the generation to bring to publication the works of his father, meaning Rav Tzvi Yehuda here at least. And I read a biography of Rav Kook by Yehuda Mirsky, which is a very nice biography. I think there's more to be said about Rav Kook for sure, but for what it attempts to do, it does it well. And he points out that Rav Tzvi Yehuda was always the one in his father's life who was clear about how important it was to publish his father's writings. Rav Kook himself wasn't clear, especially the stuff we know today, the Machshava, the Jewish thought, that was for Rav Kook, like private notebooks, and he just thoughts he was writing down, and Tzvi Yehuda was the one who thought that you had to make sure to publish it. So here too, he sees it as a command. Tzvi Yehuda is so impressed with his father that he sees it as a command of sanctity, that it needs to get out, and it's the need of the generation. And so they're bringing up this one first, Mitzvot HaTzliot Ba'aretz. So he says, when he was alive, my father, he didn't think it was any big deal to publish his Chidushei Torah, his ideas, and the only things that he published were books that had a particular need for right then, right? So, for example, there were pamphlets and articles that were about faith issues. So some of these are published in his letters, but there were pamphlets and articles about faith issues or ways to teach people halacha that was important for right then. And clearly the tshuvot that he wrote, he had sent many of them to the people who needed the answers on the questions, but he didn't see any particular need to publish all this other stuff. But in his later life, Rav Tzvi Yehuda reports, he agreed that maybe his tshuvot, his responses, should be published because those have his ideas about halachic issues and they have some of his novel ideas. And he thought that might be worth the Torah world's while to know. Therefore, he says, Nigashti az b'perek shesidru pursimu ha'igrot v'orot ha'tshuva. I put together the Igrot, the letters, that I put together over to Tshuva, which came out, and then I was going to put out Mitzvot HaTzliot Ba'aretz, this book about laws that have to do with Eretz Yisrael, and I thought they were important practically because we have an agricultural settlement that is developing in Eretz Yisrael, and then it didn't, and I called it at the time Mishpat Kohen, because it's written in the Torah, Ki Palei Mimcha Davar LeMishpat, when you don't know a certain Mishpat, the Pasuk of Devarim says, you bring it to the Kohanim. And then the Ramban had also pointed out that these are well-known Rambans, but see who is pointing them out. The Ramban says that the essence of Torah is really meant to be applied in Eretz Yisrael. It is a Ramban that's based on a Sefer, which talks about that mitzvot outside of Eretz Yisrael are almost like practice for when you get into Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't mean they're not biblically commanded outside Eretz Yisrael, many of them are. But even those that are biblically commanded Eretz Yisrael, the Sefer that the Ramban quotes, makes it sound like they're out there, they're really fundamentally practice. And then The Ramban also points out that there are places in Tanakh where the Torah and Mitzvot are called Mishpat Elokei Haaretz. So this actually comes up in a context where there are these non-Jews, and after the Northern Kingdom, Malchut Yisrael, is exiled, so Sanherib brings in these other non-Jews, and they start getting eaten by lions, and there's a whole discussion there, and over there, they talk about the fact that they need to know Mishpat, and they don't mean it as Hashem, the one God, because they're pagans. They call it Mishpat Elohei Haaretz, meaning the laws of the God of that land. They mean it with a small g, but that phrase was adopted by us in the more sanctified way, Mishpat Elokei Haaretz, and the Ramban used it in that sense, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu thought of that way, because in Eretz Israel is the primary place that Torah is meant to be applied, and the Torah is for the Jewish people, and so therefore, Rav Tzvi Yehuda says, that would be make sense then, that if we're going to try to start publishing Rav Kook's works and Rav Kook's ideas in Torah, that we would start with Mitzvot HaTliyot Ba'aretz, because they're so central to the rest of Torah. And therefore, he says, I put right at the beginning of Eitz Hadar, Al Erech Sharshiut Kedushata HaKarkait. Right, that in Eretz Yisrael you have the land itself as a kedusha and things and issues like that. So that was the book Mishpat Kohen. At the time he says that he edited it, he was planning on bringing it out and publishing it. It didn't happen for external reasons having nothing to do with the book. And now in 1937, they're finally getting to publishing it. He says also another important value of the book is that along the way to finding halacha, what's called la'asuke shmatata aliba dehilchata. Finding, this is seen as the highest ideal of Torah learning. The highest ideal of Torah learning is not that you just learn an idea and you come up with a brilliant, what in Yiddish you might call an einfall, a brilliant idea of some sort, but that it has halacha, you take a sugya and you carry it all the way through until understanding how to put it into practice in a very real life way that fits in the real world. So there's all of that in the Sefer as well. But he says along the way also, there's indications of the right way to learn Torah. Bilimura Torah HaKadosha V'iyuna. And also, it's got encouragement to keeping mitzvot and to reviving mitzvot that have not been around for a long time. And also, you have Chazal that he just talks about that are more theoretical. You have all of it. In other words, saying this book, for all that it's a book with halakhic conclusions, it's got so many things in it that it's very valuable, and therefore I see a lot of value in the publishing of it. And he talks about the order and how he was going to go by the order of the Rambam, and then at some points he switched because of the value of it. He's got all these issues, and he tells us some of the issues come up in the book, things like how you have a king and how people do or don't violate the public. If people violate the public square, what we can do to them, what we can't do to them, and other issues. He talks about the mistakes, and that's his introduction for the 18th of Av. Again, a nice introduction, perfectly fine, perfectly worth reading, but I'm not sure if that would have made me as excited as I am today about this, and I'm hoping, I confess, especially if you're still listening, I'm hoping that you are excited enough as well that you will finish today and, you know, call all your friends or send an email to all your friends and talk about how taking a responsible day helps us stumble across really interesting and really valuable and really productive aspects of Torah that we might not otherwise come across, that sometimes don't come our way, and that the excitement will spill over not just to you but to other people as well. So here's the exciting thing. When Rav Kook wrote some of parts of this book that became Mishpat Kohen, and particularly he wrote what became chapters 52 and 53 of this book, which was about Vidui Ma'aser, 55 and 56, which was about Vidui Ma'aser. So Vidui Ma'aser is, let's remember, the rhythm of agricultural life in Eretz Yisrael. The rhythm of agricultural life in a traditional, in a real halachic Eretz Yisrael would be that every seventh year was a Shemitah. Right? Every seventh year was a sabbatical year. You didn't work the land. You didn't do anything with it. In the other years, in the first 6 years, so every year you would give bikurim, first fruit, you would give truma, you would give what we call a tithe, but it's not really a tenth, but you'd give some of it to a kohen, then you'd give a maaser to a levi, and then you had a second maaser, a second tenth you had to take with you, do something with. So in years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the cycle, those are called maaser sheni. That second maaser was supposed to be taken to Yerushalayim and eaten there, or redeemed for money, the money brought to Yerushalayim and used there for food. And then years 3 and 6 were what's called Maaser Ani. Instead of taking that money to Yerushalayim, it would be given to, or that agriculture, that produce to Yerushalayim, it would be given to the poor, 3 and 6. After the first 3 years of Maaser, You had to make sure that you had used them up already. That was called Biur Maser, meaning if you have Maser Sheni from year one, you're not required to use it right away. You have to use it. So if it's produce, it's going to go bad. You'd have to make sure to use it. But if you redeemed it for money and you didn't get to Yerushalayim that year, that's not a problem. But by Pesach of year four, you had to have gotten rid of all of that Maser, and that was called Biur Maser. You had to get rid of it. And then you would say Avidui Maser. That we have in the Torah, in the beginning of Parashat Ki Tavo, you have this Vidui of that I got rid of it in the right way, and I didn't eat it the wrong way. Right? I did everything you wanted. Rav Kook, in 1893, Tafresh Nun Gimel. Right? In Tafresh Nun Gimel, Rav Kook was writing about that issue. And he is not in Eretz Yisrael. He moved to Eretz Yisrael 11 years later. He is in Zaymel, where he was the rabbi in Zaymel for many years. And he's living there, and he's writing about these issues. He's thinking about these issues. And so before he wrote these simanim on Vidui Maser, on how we announce that we've gotten rid of all of our Maser, of all of our, this second tenth, before he announces it, before he writes an introduction. And here's the introduction that he writes. And that's what I think is so exciting, because this is Rav Kook writing still in Galut, still in exile, before he moves to Eretz Yisrael. And 11 years later, he moves to Eretz Yisrael, and you see that burning in him already is this connection to Eretz Yisrael, and to rebuilding Eretz Yisrael, and to rediscovering the Torah of Eretz Yisrael. It's all right there. So he says, Minalon de Avdinan Zechel HaMikdash. How do we know that we're required to find ways to memorialize, commemorate the Mikdash? And let's remember that we're learning this on the 19th of Av. I'm actually recording it much earlier than that. So for me, the 3 weeks are about to happen. But we're learning the 19th of Av, which is right after Tisha B'Av, so it could be maybe a stimulus to us as well to remember the importance of having a Zechel HaMikdash, of commemorating the temple. So the pasuk says, this is a gemara, he's quoting a gemara in Rosh Hashanah. And the gemara in Rosh Hashanah now quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyahu Lamed in chapter 30, verse 17 of Yirmiyahu. Ki ele arukah lach l'makotayich erpaech. I'm going to provide you healing from your various wounds and illnesses. Tzion hi dirot doresh ein la. The end of the pasuk is that it's Tzion, which has no doresh. Nobody's looking out for it. Tzion. The gemara says, michlal debaya drisha. We have to be, it tells you that we have to be looking out for Tzion and thinking of Tzion. So Cook says he thinks that, and this is a medical claim, I don't know if you have to believe in it, but this was traditional medical view. He says there are really two kinds of illnesses or wounds that people have. There are internal ones and external ones, right? So we can get a fever, that's an internal one, or can have something, God forbid, can have an ulcer, something internal, or you can have an external, you can have a wound, you can have a cut, you can have a rash, you can have all sorts of things on the outside. By and large, the traditional medicine, he quotes the Rambam, who had said this in his writings on medicine, by and large, and this is true for sure of the Rambam, the things that we have going on inside of us, somebody has a fever, somebody has whatever it might be, the ways to solve those, or a headache, the ways to solve those are by taking medicine. So taking medicine, the Rambam says, especially in the Rambam's time, those are much more like herbs and things like that. They're almost like food. Right, you take them internally, and they're sort of like food. They're not something we would normally eat, but they're sort of like food. As opposed to, if somebody, God forbid, has a broken arm or a cut, so then you'll bandage it up. That's an external, and it's not connected to the ordinary process of human living. So you got these internal problems. You fix internally by sort of just adjusting how we eat and how by eating things that we should be right. How we eat, and externally, you do it externally. That's a claim to be made. If you want to fit it into today's medicine, you'd have to argue that even things that go in by an IV, they're liquids, and in that sense, they're like food, whatever it is. I'm not deeply devoted to it. But the last piece of it, he says, though, but sometimes there are external wounds or problems. Here's the rash example, where the way that we solve them is much more similar to the internal way. So, you know, sometimes if you have an external, you can have an external problem, like let's say a chicken pox, and what you'll do is you'll take medicine for it that you'll swallow internally, right? So that's what he's talking about, those kinds of wounds or rashes. You put a cream on it, which isn't like a food, it's more like a cream. In any case, his point is that for those, the reason why that's true in his model is that the external wound, in that case, is really a function of something going on inside. Meaning, somebody gets a cut, it happened externally, so it's healed externally. Somebody gets a rash, it's something that's happening inside the body, and therefore, the real healing needs to happen inside the body. That's the claim that he's making. The medical part of it is not as important to us as what he says then. This is the part that's very relevant. Shtayim heina koroteinu. There are two problems that happen with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. There's the internal problem and the external. The external problem is what we all know. We don't have a Beit HaMikdash. It was destroyed, sadly, for us. Beit Tifarteinu, our house of wonder, has burned it up. We can't keep the mitzvos that are connected to it, and we went into exile. And by going into exile, we don't have any connection to the mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael. But then, there's also an internal wound. The internal wound or illness is that whole area of Torah is not as alive for us. And if it's not alive for us, then we don't know it as well. Meaning, there have always been people who have studied these areas of halacha. But when you study in theory in halacha, this is a very important point that's made by many people. I heard in our times, I've heard Rosh Lichtenstein say it also as well. If you don't study it for real applications, it's still Torah, and the people are doing the best that they can, but it doesn't have that same life to it, and it also doesn't come alive as much, and it's not as well applied because it can't be, because it's not being applied in reality. Then he points out a pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, "Alma avda aretz, why was the land destroyed?" And it continues to say, "Al ozvam et torati, that they left my Torah." Rav Kook says, "From that we know." Remember, this is a very, very young Rav Kook. I think he's 33. He's writing this in Russia somewhere, you know, in the Eastern Europe somewhere, in Zaymel. And he's saying, he thinks it's clear that if we go back to Hashem's Torah then, from that pasuk, "Alma avda aretz, the land was destroyed because they left the Torah." If we go back to that Torah, "Lahagot l'ha'amik," to think about it, to go into depth in it, into the Torah of Eretz Yisrael, it'll bring the Yeshua, it'll bring the redemption to us, it'll bring salvation to us. Now, it's an interesting thing to say because there have been people before who have studied the Torah and never merited that kind of redemption and that kind of return to Eretz Yisrael, but that's how he's understanding it. In his case, it clearly worked out for him. So, he's saying if we get involved with this Torah again, it will lead us back not just to the Torah, but it'll lead us back to Israel and to the rebuilding of all these kinds of things. He says Hashem actually put that as a metaphysical, a skula, a metaphysical reality of the Torah. When the Gemara says, "Gadol Torah shebevili de ma'aseh," Torah is so great, it brings us to action, to living it out. He says that's not just a psychological statement that people who learn happen to do. It's a skula. It's a metaphysical reality, he's saying, that we can do it. We can learn from our Torah to apply it and let it change us. But there's a chilek gavoa there, that even the mitzvah that we don't have the ability to do that, meaning if I learn about Hilchos Tefillin and then put on Tefillin better or write Tefillin better, that's me taking the Torah that I learned and putting it to Maaseh. That's on me. But there are plenty of things that I can learn, Rav Kook is saying, where it's not on me. I don't have the ability to make sure. And he says, but when the Gemara says, "Gedolat Torah shebevili de Maaseh," that means that Hashem has, as it were, taken upon it himself, that those who learn and study these halachot carefully, that Hashem will make sure that we get the chance to put them into practice. And therefore, if we start learning carefully and with effort these sections of the Torah, Hashem will help us bring them to reality. Now, you could say that's a wild thing for him to say, but it happened to work out exactly well in his life. He's involving himself in this, and you think about the rest of his life. He moves to Eretz Yisrael, and he watches and is part of helping settlements and agricultural settlements build, and all those kinds of things. And he says, unfortunately, the other way around too, if we don't pay attention to these things, he thinks that will be a reason that we will not find ourselves finding the salvation and getting to Eretz Yisrael and doing all those kinds of things. So because of all this, he says, he's learning for himself that it's time to take on studying of some of these issues, to study and bring them to life, the Mikdash and the Kodesh, and Uvazeni Tanyad Le'ezrat Ameinu. We're going to be part of helping our people. It's a fascinating thing to say, and it's self-confidence that I think is fascinating to watch. He feels, in his own way, that by him sitting in a room in Zaymel and studying these halachot and writing about them, although he doesn't intend to publish them, he's just recording notes for himself on these issues, he is helping open the door to the settlement of Eretz Yisrael and to the revivifying of these halachot. V'niftach petach tikva lishuat Hashem lanu. And we'll open up opening of hope, Petach Tikva. I think the settlement of Petach Tikva might already have been created by then, although I forgot to look it up. And we will help open for Hashem to bring his Yeshua, Metzitz Min HaCharakim, who's always looking through the lattice, right? Looking through the holes in the walls to try to find ways to save us. And that's what the Navi says about it, right? And we think we're going to be part of that. So Lefiz Reim HaMorim Neida. So we've got these two makalot, the external one of the Churban of the destruction, and the internal one of losing sight of these areas of Torah. Like he had started out by saying that there are certain external problems that are treated internally, he's trying to treat this one internally to, as far as he says, with our limited abilities. Of course, his limited abilities were different than our own limited abilities. With our limited abilities, we're going to do our part to the extent that we can't do a Zecha LeMikdash, and that'll be by studying Torah and by the halachos that have to do it. And that's why I'm starting to talk about it. He's writing in, as I said, 1893, Tavreish and Gimel, because that was the fourth year of a Shemitah year. So the fourth year of a Shemitah year was year you had to do Vidui Maaser. And since he's doing Vidui Maaser, he's writing about it now. So that is what Rav Kook said. So you have, for the 19th of Av, you have a wonderful introduction to Sefer Mishpat Kohen. Maybe at a time to come, I will find the time and the ability to study Mishpat Kohen, and we can be part of joining Rav Kook in doing this. But we have the introduction of those who were putting out the Sefer. That's Rav Meir Berlin and his son Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, who had been part of the one who encouraged him to publish it, and also the one who did the editing of it. And then you have Rav Kook's introduction from long before this. This is written in 1937. This is, you know, 44 years earlier, when Rav Kook was just writing two chapters of the book, but already had this idea, the study of these halachot could be the opening to some of the wonders that we see today. And that is our responsible day for the 19th of Av. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you come back. I hope you share this with friends. And I hope you let me know how we're doing. Have a great day. Responsible day for 19th of Av. Have a great day.